Later today, President Trump will get the Independence Day signing ceremony he's been demanding.
This is for the mega bill he and Republicans in Congress pushed over the finish line yesterday afternoon. Speaking under the wing of Air Force One as he departed for a victory rally in Iowa, Trump said the celebration would include a military aircraft flyover.
And it's going to be a great day. So we'll be signing with those beautiful planes flying right over our heads.
The One Big Beautiful Bill, as President Trump has been calling it, contains the president's entire domestic legislative agenda.
With more, we're joined now by NPR senior White House correspondent Tamara Keith. So, Tam, what is the president saying about this bill's passage?
Well, as you might imagine, he and his allies are taking a victory lap. Trump was in Iowa last night for a rally and said with this bill, he kept every major promise he made to voters when he ran for office last year.
Very simply, the One Big Beautiful Bill would deliver the strongest border on earth, the strongest economy on earth, the strongest military on earth, and ensure the United States of America will remain the strongest country anywhere on this beautiful planet of ours.
Trump was, to borrow a word he likes to use, rather braggadocious about his success last night, asking, has anybody ever had a better 2 weeks?
Now, 48 hours ago, though, there was some drama. I mean, it looked like that bill and the president's timeline were in trouble. So what happened?
Well, there were quite a few Republican holdouts, but President Trump turned on the charm and then he turned up the pressure. And ultimately, all but two Republicans in the House who had been holding out folded. At a press conference after the bill passed, Majority Leader Steve Scalise gave Trump all the credit.
Donald Trump absolutely was our closer, and Donald Trump never stopped. Every day was there in the fight. Who do I need to call? What do I need to do? No president more directly engaged.
This was a pivotal moment in Trump's presidency, and he and his party rose to it. It took all-night debates and arm-twisting and passed with incredibly narrow margins in both the House and the Senate. And the question now is whether it becomes a long-term political win or more of an albatross.
Oh, okay. Sounds like you're talking about the midterm elections.
Indeed. Next year, Republicans in swing districts will have to defend their votes. And so far, public polling has found this bill to be pretty unpopular. Democrats have had a lot of success in branding it as a tax cut for the rich at the expense of the poor and the vulnerable. A senior White House official conceded in a call yesterday with reporters that the president and Republicans are going to have to educate the public on what's actually in the bill, including things that are popular, like no tax on tips or expanding the child tax credit. And another thing to watch is the Medicaid cuts in the bill, which an independent analysis found would cause nearly 12 million people to lose coverage. Those will phase in more slowly, which may give Republicans some political cover, because people often don't draw a direct line between things happening in their lives and something politicians in Washington passed years earlier.
Yeah, now, still a lot of uncertainty, though. Various global conflicts, the U.S. tariff policy. What challenges lie ahead, though?
Well, it depends on how you feel about tariffs. Early next week, Trump's tariff pause is set to end, and his administration has not had much success striking trade deals. So he says he's just going to start sending letters to countries telling them how high their tariffs will be going forward. Economists say tariffs are going to hit American consumers, but Trump is unconcerned. Trump is also burning up the phones to various world leaders trying to wind down the conflicts in Gaza and Ukraine. And then there's Iran. All of which is to say, a president's work is never done.
NPR senior White House correspondent Tamara Keith, thanks.
You're welcome.
Ukraine says it needs crucial munitions, such as air defense missiles, as Russia escalates its airstrikes on Ukrainian cities, including a large-scale attack on the capital, Kyiv, overnight.
The Pentagon says the U.S. might not have enough stockpiles and has paused some weapons shipments already promised to Ukraine. Meanwhile, President Trump called Russian leader Vladimir Putin on Thursday and is expected to speak to Ukraine's president later today.
With us now to discuss all of this is NPR's Ukraine correspondent, Joanna Kakissis, who is in Kyiv. And a warning, we're going to hear sounds of explosions and gunfire during this report. So, Joanna, did President Trump make any progress in convincing his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, to end the war in this phone call?
Well, President Trump said he did not make progress, and that aligns with what the Kremlin told state-run media in Moscow. Kremlin aide Yuri Ushakov said Putin will not agree to a ceasefire until what he calls the root causes of Russia's invasion of Ukraine are addressed.
Root causes. That sounds like something we've heard before.
Yeah, that's usually shorthand for the Kremlin's claim that it invaded Ukraine in 2022 to prevent the country from joining NATO, the Western Security Alliance. Now, the Kremlin has said NATO could use Ukraine as a launch pad to attack Russia. Now, Ukraine and its allies have firmly rejected this claim. And also, Vladimir Putin himself has suggested that all of Ukraine belongs to Russia.
Now, did Putin and Trump discuss the military aid the Pentagon says it's withholding from Ukraine?
Well, the Kremlin said that the weapons pause was not discussed during this call. The Pentagon says the reason for the pause is that it's been reviewing stockpiles and discovered certain weapons, especially air defense missiles, are running low. However, the shipments were already on their way to Ukraine, and they have reportedly stopped in Poland, according to NPR's Tom Bowman. Now, Ukraine is trying to find a new source for some weapons and munitions, including making their own. Ukrainian security analyst Hanna Shellis told me that cannot happen quickly.
Ukraine is now developing different types of munition because we understand that we don't have reliable partners anymore. But at the same time, we cannot just do it in 1 month.
And A, there are items like missiles for American-designed Patriot air defense systems that only the U.S. can provide, at least for now.
Now, how have Ukrainians reacted to this pause?
Well, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he wants to speak to Trump about it. The two leaders are set to talk by phone later this morning. Because Russian airstrikes are now more frequent, Ukraine is burning through air defense supplies to protect its cities. So, A, I recorded air defense teams last night here in Kyiv trying to shoot down Russian drones and missiles flying over our neighborhood. We heard explosions all night. There were injuries, fires, lots of damage. And this morning, the air had this burning smell. And now on Thursday, a city that's less protected than Kyiv was attacked, the city of Poltava. It's about a four-hour drive east of Kyiv. We spoke with Olha Tukova, a 34-year-old mom there. She saw a drone flying over her car as she was picking her child up from kindergarten.
It is becoming more and more dangerous in Poltava. Of course, we have a lot of people fighting, but everyone says that we really lack weapons, air defense, to defend ourselves.
So it's really obvious to her and other Ukrainians that air defense is crucial now, especially as the Kremlin appears determined to continue its war on Ukraine.
That's NPR's Joanna Kakissis in Kyiv. Joanna, thank you.
You're welcome.
Since its founding, the United States has been a nation of immigrants.
Most Americans have ancestors who came from somewhere else, either by choice or by force. As we mark this Independence Day, a big demographic shift is underway. Forecasters say, for the first time in more than six decades, more immigrants are likely to leave the U.S. than come in this year, and that could be a drag on the economy.
NPR's Scott Horsley joins us now. So, Scott, what's behind this shift?
We know that illegal immigration across the southern border has pretty much dried up. The Trump administration has also been narrowing a lot of legal pathways for immigration, like the refugee program and temporary visas. So a joint forecast from the left-leaning Brookings Institution and the right-leaning American Enterprise Institute projects there will be at least 2.5 million fewer immigrants coming into the country this year than in 2024. And Brookings' Wendy Edelberg says at the same time, we're seeing more immigrants leaving the U.S. either through deportation or voluntarily.
It stands to reason that if you make the United States a really inhospitable place for immigrants, then immigrants, particularly those with really good outside options, those immigrants will leave.
Edelberg expects the net outflow of immigration to increase next year. You know, the big GOP spending bill that just passed includes a lot more money for immigration enforcement and makes other changes designed to make coming to the U.S. less inviting.
Yeah, and one thing that has historically drawn people to the U.S. is the strong economy. So what does it mean if that flow is suddenly reversed?
Immigration has been helping prop up the U.S. economy. We would not have enjoyed the strong job gains in recent years had it not been for the big influx of foreign-born workers. Some of those prominent companies in the U.S. have been started by immigrants. Edelberg says if that pipeline is choked off and more immigrants head for the exits, the U.S. will be left with fewer workers, fewer people spending money, and a smaller economy overall.
I feel strongly that, look, if we decide as a country that we don't want to welcome immigrants, that's a choice we can make. I just want us to make that choice with our eyes wide open.
Now, the Trump administration has a theory that there are a lot of native-born Americans sitting on the sidelines who could be lured into the job market to take the place of the missing immigrants. There's not a lot of historical evidence of that, but that's the gamble the White House is making here.
If more people keep leaving the U.S. than actually coming in, I mean, what happens? Does that population drain just continue?
Not necessarily. The forecasters at Brookings and AEI think after a couple of years of out-migration, there will be enough pushback from employers and ordinary citizens that we will start to see some of these policies reversed, and once again, the flow of immigrants into the U.S. will gradually return. But, you know, that's not guaranteed. Edelberg warns that once the U.S. pulls up the welcome mat, immigrants who, you know, by definition, have a lot of get-up-and-go might decide to take their talents elsewhere.
While we're doing this grand experiment, other countries, if they're clever, will say to the most highly productive, best immigrants, no, come here. We will welcome you with open arms.
So even if the U.S. eventually changes course, it may not be so easy to win the immigrants back. You know, Adam Smith published his famous economics treatise, The Wealth of Nations, back in 1776, just a few months before the Declaration of Independence was signed. In the 2.5 centuries since then, immigration has been a great source of wealth for this nation. We'll see if that continues.
All right, NPR's Scott Horsley. Scott, thank you.
You're welcome.